acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 158, Mitten Knittin', Sunday, March 5th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes with links and photos of the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Gratitude Journal, and I will announce the winners of the Taproot Make Along at the end of this episode. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Thank you so much to those of you who reached out with some condolences following my last episode with the scary story about some bleeding that happened when I soaked and blocked my project for the Taproot Make Along. I am in recovery mode. I decided to jump right back into stranded knitting and color work. And I'm currently participating in the New Hampshire Knits Mitten Cowl. I've selected a pattern that's been on my mind for quite some time. It's a pattern called Mushroom Kelly Muffs by Spilly Jane, and it appears in Mary J. Mucklestone's Fair Isle Style. There are actually several traditional or more traditional mitten patterns in this book, as well as this darling pattern for fingerless mitts. And I would like to continue knitting some of the patterns in this book, Fair Isle Style. It's kind of like contemporary updated versions of some traditional Fair Isle. It's where I got the pattern for the Bressy dress that I made for Rhinebeck, and the pattern I want to make again for Rhinebeck next year with some of my hand spun. And my idea for making these mittens was twofold. I wanted to practice the pattern motif and really see how it worked so I could think about how to apply it to the color work yoke of this dress that I want to make. And I wanted to test out some yarn that I was considering for the dress. So the pattern is truly a traditional Fair Isle motif in that it has very small pattern designs, so you're never making very many stitches in a row with the same color. In fact, in these Mushroom Kelly Muffs, there is one section of six stitches in a row with the same color, and everything else is fewer than six stitches in a row. So I haven't had to do any tacking of a color behind the work. It has gone very smoothly. I'm knitting this on US size zero needles, which has resulted in a nice, dense fabric. I've completed one mitt, and it is a little bit snug. So I think I could have stayed on US size ones for this pattern. It calls for US 2, and my gauge on US 2s was way too loose. So I think these mitts will be a gift, but they're just beautiful. I love the way the mushroom motif stands out. I really like the colors that I chose. And for the first time, I'm knitting with Jameson & Smith 2-ply jumper weight yarn. I use that for the main color, which is like a deep chocolatey brown. Also, I purchased some really vibrant red. For the white and the rust color, I'm just using leftover yarn from my cowl project. And for the cuff of the mitt, I began with the very last of my Cornish tin 2 that was left over from the cowl knitting. And this is just a beautiful, soft, lovely yarn. And I used every last bit that I had in order to knit the cuffs for these mitts. Because I'm using US size 0 needles, not only the stitch gauge, but also the row gauge can tend to be a little bit less. So to compensate for that, I added just a few rounds of the main color, both above the wrist of the mitt and then just below the ribbing for around the fingers. I think I could have even added a few more rounds, or I could have added a round, another round between each of the motifs. There's a mushroom motif, and then there's sort of a directional arrows motif. And I could have lengthened these mitts a little bit by adding an additional round of the main color between the motifs. But that's a learning experience and something I can certainly take in consideration for the yoke of the dress. Those rounds of the main color are really important because they are where you can do increases or decreases, as the case may be. And it's very difficult to achieve that while you're knitting the color work. So I'm learning about how color work happens, how it's constructed, and how you can be creative and play with it a little bit. The second reason I was trying out the Jamison & Smith 2-ply jumper weight is that I was considering it for the main color of this bressé dress that I want to knit. However, it is too fine to be a good match for my hand spun. I really need something in the realm of a sport weight yarn. So I will continue searching. I think I may end up with a Bartlett yarn sport weight cone. I'd like to use Shetland because the hand spun I'm using is Shetland. So I think that would be good. And the colors are absolutely sumptuous of Jamison & Smith. And I think it's the perfect, perfect yarn for knitting these kinds of stranded colorwork mittens. I think this sort of thing is an excellent gift. It has certainly worked up very quickly in comparison to, you know, the feet of knitting that I was doing on that colorwork cowl. So I have one mitten complete, and I'm about a third of the way done with the second mitt. So I have really enjoyed working on this, and thank Claire of New Hampshire Knits for hosting this cowl and being so encouraging of everyone to try colorwork mittens. And it's also a fantastic Instagram feed. I think colorwork is just such a great candidate for an Instagram post, and everyone seems to really enjoy them. Ever-expanding skill set. During the month of February, I had a great time making soups along with other listeners. And at the end of the month, I tried a soup I've heard a lot about, but I've just never taken the initiative to make it myself. And this is Avgo Limono. I hope my pronunciation of that is correct. As the name of this soup implies, it features egg and lemon. It's a chicken soup that is thickened with a mixture of egg and lemon. It seems really strange, I guess, to the uninitiated. But this creates a silky, lovely texture in the soup that is just really nourishing. And also the sharpness of that lemon against the chicken and the rice in the soup creates a really nice contrast. And I think it's perfect for this time of year when we like sort of the brighter flavors of spring as things are warming up. I used a recipe that was recommended by Amos GW. She had made the soup earlier in the month, and I thought, I want to try that. And she linked a recipe from Kat Cora from the Food Network. So I will include that link in the show notes, but there are many, many variations. And I actually made a variation of this variation because I didn't want to use necessarily an entire chicken to make this soup. I'm just cooking for two. I had never made it before, and I didn't really know if we would love it. I anticipated that we would like it, but I wasn't completely certain about it. And so I began by roasting a whole organic chicken the way I usually do, and then making a stock. And that allowed me to use the chicken throughout the week in other dishes. And I made enough stock for the soup and also some to freeze. And I think that versatility, even though it was kind of a variation on the usual methods, that versatility worked out perfect for my weeknight kitchen. This recipe from Kat Cora calls for using arborio rice, which is the rice traditionally used for risotto. And that lends a real structure to the soup. And then, of course, the shredded chicken. There were carrots and leeks also in the soup, which I think gives it a more complex flavor than just using carrots, celery, and onions. And then, of course, this egg and lemon mixture. And the way this works, it's a technique. I suppose it's a technique I'm familiar with from baking when you need to bring something up to temperature so that it doesn't curdle or seize in a hot liquid. And so you whisk together egg and lemon juice, and then very, very, very slowly you add a stream of hot broth to this mixture. And you're whisking constantly, and you keep adding broth until you bring that egg and lemon mixture up to or nearly up to the temperature of the soup in the pot. And then you can add that whole thing in. And it just thickens beautifully. It's a really delicious soup. I think I will be making it again this spring. And certainly something to keep in mind in particular for this time of year. In March, we will be trying sauces for our ever-expanding skill set. I posted a link to an article about the six different types of sauces, and I hope you will consider cooking along with us, maybe trying a sauce that you've heard of or trying to replicate something you've had in a restaurant, and sharing some recipes, sharing some things that work well in your kitchen. Or maybe sauces have a tendency to really communicate something about a certain type of cooking or cooking from a certain region of the world. Sauces can sort of transport you geographically. So if you have a sauce that really speaks from the kind of cooking you like to do and the kind of food that really you identify with, this would be a great opportunity to maybe share some of that and to travel just by making some experimental sauces in your kitchen. Gratitude journal. Over the past week, I've had a visit from a former student, and I've had the opportunity to make some new friends. And I'm grateful for both of these things. I think with our busy, busy, crazy lives, sometimes it's easy to lose track of anything that's not directly in front of you. And so I was really grateful this week for a visit from Celine. You may remember Celine from the podcast. She was a senior at the high school where I work last year, and now she's a college student in Michigan. And she came back for a visit and brought a project that she had completed for one of her college courses. She was taking a literature course studying the female character in mythology. I think there were some other components to the course, but that's the gist of it as far as I could understand. And the professor gave an option to the required final paper, which was to do a project, a creative project, with an artist's statement. So Celine jumped on this opportunity, and with no experience in stranded knitting or colorwork, she designed her own motifs, knit a tapestry style piece. It's about maybe 10 inches by 24 inches. And she knit all of her motifs into this piece with black as the main color and a really vibrant gold as the contrast color. And then she purchased fabric and hand sewed a back to the piece so it would have more structure to it and it would hide some of the newbie stranded color work sorts of things that I guess were evident from the back of the piece. None of them were evident when you look at the front of the piece. I took a photo and I will include it in the show notes. She designed Medusa, Leda and the Swan, and another myth where Zeus arrives as a bull. And is it Calliope? I forget now. But she also had waves along the edge of this piece to symbolize Poseidon. And just, it's really exquisite. Such a bold undertaking and such a testament to what a warrior Celine is when it comes to her craft. It really has a willingness to try new things. So I was so glad when she visited that there were also some other students from the String Theory Knit and Crochet Club on hand that day to come and say hi. And even though our club activity has kind of dwindled during spring sports season, it was really nice to have that visit and reconnect. And we talked about plans to maybe get that club going with some more regularity in the very near future. Last Saturday, I visited a local shop for the first time. I've heard about this shop, but I haven't had a chance to go over to Hope's Favorite Things, which is only about 10 miles or so from where I live. And Hope, the proprietor, has an amazingly lovely shop selling lots of handmade items as well as hand-spun yarn, fiber. She is a salesperson of Ashford spinning wheels and other Ashford products. And she makes bats. She has some drum carders there. And starting in the new year, she has been hosting Last Saturday spin-ins where you can bring your spinning, you can bring a wheel. I just brought my drop spindle because I wasn't sure what to expect. And I arrived at just after 10 to a room full of people already spinning. And it was just lively and wonderful. Hope was feeding people all day long. And it was just a really great chance to meet some new folks and to see that so many people are so interested in spinning and the fiber arts. Some were very local. Some had traveled quite a distance to get to the shop. And it was just a really lovely morning. So I plan to attend whenever I can. She hosts these on the last Saturday of each month. And hopefully return to see some of the folks who are there. There is a local spinning guild, and many of the people who were in attendance do belong to that guild. However, I am not able to make those meetings because they're always held on a weekday during the day. I have mixed feelings about that because I feel like it, you know, it excludes working people, and I'm sure there are reasons for where and when and why the group convenes. But it is a goal of mine to be more involved in the local community in terms of fiber arts, because I think that's where the outreach really is. It is lots of fun for me to go to festivals and meet up with people that I know from online and even maintain some pretty close relationships online with lots of chatting and video conferencing and that kind of thing. But I think the real opportunity for outreach to happen needs to occur at a much more local level. And so I would really like to become part of that. And I'm grateful to people like Hope who open their doors and create a place for community to happen. And it's just really impossible to be miserable when you're sitting in this lovely, whimsical room surrounded by beautiful fiber and fiber supplies and people just doing all sorts of spinning projects all around you. So thank you, Hope, and thanks to the new friends I made at Hope's Favorite Things. And now for the prizes. Our Taproot Make-Along has reached its conclusion. This has been a great deal of fun and very popular. The Yarns at Yinhu podcast has a small but mighty listenership. And in the past, my knit-alongs and make-alongs may, I don't know, sometimes they're sort of a niche type of thing and not a lot of participation. But in reviewing the chat and the threads for this make-along, the numbers are pretty significant. In this thread, there were 178 posts, 49 images, 6 different patterns, 17 projects. And I think that's low because a lot of the projects for this make-along were not necessarily knitting projects with patterns on Ravelry. There were 29 voices in this thread and 186 readers. So lots and lots of folks just checking in. Maybe they can be encouraged to participate in the future. I will be leaving this thread open. I have changed the title of the thread to Taproot Chat, and it seems that recently Taproot has become much more popular. A lot of folks on Ravelry seem to be reading it or have an interest in it, and so I thought it could be a good place for us to continue talking about and sharing anything that we read or make or learn from the magazine. I think it's increased in terms of its subscriptions over the last few months. I'd like to thank everyone who participated. Many folks were crafting along. Some chimed in just to give encouraging words, ask questions, things like that, and everything was eligible for prizes. My method for generating these winners was to use the random number generator. I had to regenerate quite a bit because quite a few of the posts were mine as I was chiming in to talk about people's progress. And I want to thank also the generous folks, I will mention them here by name, who have contributed some prizes for this make-along. It was very generous and kind. Thank you so much for doing that. The most recent issue of Taproot, issue 21, is Weave, with a gorgeous, gorgeous cover. It just arrived in my mailbox, but before it arrived, I was already getting some messages on social media about a post of mine that was featured in the magazine. At the very beginning, on one of the very first pages, they have as seen on Instagram, and my post with the homemade marshmallows was featured on that page. So that's pretty exciting, and exciting that people saw it and recognized me. So thank you for letting me know. I was really eager to get to my mailbox, and it is just a beautiful issue. It seems as though the hands section of Taproot is growing with each new issue. All right, without further ado, the prizes. The first prize was donated by Jasper Patch. It is a Ravelry pattern of your choice with a value of $8 or less. And the winner for post number 128 is Bliss Cat, Katrina. And Bliss Cat made a Taproot tunic from issue 8 of the magazine. This is an issue I don't have. I didn't know about that tunic until Bliss Cat was posting her progress, and it is really cute. It's a cute summer top. It looks very versatile. And congratulations, Bliss Cat. The next prize is a Turkish spindle. This is from Snyder's Spindles. It is very small, lightweight Turkish spindle, my favorite kind of spindle. This is a gift from me, and I will also throw in some Rolags to give you a good start. I think that spinning Rolags is a great way to begin on a spindle. And the winner of that is for post number 177, Maggie's Corner. And Maggie did a number of different kinds of crafts from Taproot for this make-along. And one of the things she was making was the upcycled mitts. I think there was also a hat in those directions from upcycled wool material. So congratulations, Maggie. Next, Lost and Lovely has contributed a really cool upcycled denim Notions pouch. It's a zippered Notions pouch. I know this is awesome because she sent me one and I have been using it. So she will be sending this out to the winner for post number 64, and that is Northern Flicker Nancy. And Nancy has been knitting the Selkie hat and mitts, and the fabric that is created with these cables and the yarn she chose is just dense and wonderful. Another prize that I didn't list, but I've decided to add, is a pattern for Reflecting Light Mittens by Emily Estrada of the Fibertown podcast. I think that buying patterns from podcasters is a great way to support the podcasts you enjoy. And so Emily has just recently added this pattern to the many, many that she has available. And I thought this would be a great gift. So the winner is for post number 78. That's Judy in the Dyes, who is a fellow Journal Cowl knitter. And if you already have this pattern, I would be happy to gift you another of Emily's patterns so you can let me know. And finally, there is a very generous prize from Bliss Cat, which is a subscription to Taproot magazine. She's offering a one-year subscription. Isn't that nice? It's for you if you aren't already a subscriber, or maybe if you are, you'd like to just tack another year on to your subscription, or maybe you've been getting and enjoying Taproot for a while and you would like to get a friend a subscription. Whatever you want, Katrina will get that for you. The winner is for post number 107, Soaky Knitter, who is Sally. Congratulations. So if you are a winner of one of these prizes, please PM me on Ravelry. If you could write prize in your subject line, that would be great. And I will either get you your prize or I will get you in contact with the very generous person who offered up the prize. Thank you for making along with me. This has just been really, really a great make along and a really nice experience to see what everyone has been up to over the past few months. I have had an inquiry about an upcoming make along, a summer tops make along, and I think in a future episode I will discuss some of the specifics of that. It seems like a very good idea and a timely idea and could be a lot of fun. So I am thinking about a summer top make along. Maybe beginning sometime in April.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature. A sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Chipmunk on the lawn. Six turkeys up in munching like fat hogs. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. deserve is gonna get you high. You better tell your face to smile. Jump in a river naked and hike a country mile and say, sweet nature, sweet nature, babe. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature
Thanks for listening. The theme song for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, recorded by Bovine Social Club. If you enjoy this episode, I hope you'll consider joining the Ravelry group or the Facebook page, following me on social media, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes, links, and photographs of the things I talk about on my website. yarns@yinhu.com. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.